Hey, Game Pass or Pass subscriber score here. We had some audio issues. Like I know I said in the past, I promised it's been fixed, and it has, but we got some new equipment over the break, and unfortunately, that it installed some software we weren't aware of, and it got a hold of the audio files. And yeah, so that's where we are. So Basher's side, unfortunately, is extremely messed up. I did my best to clean it up, but it had a lot of roll off, and basically, whenever he was started talking, it would pick him up, and then it would drop the quality and drop the volume basically was super low. So I can always amplify it, but then it results in peaking, etc. So it's not the best. I did the best I could, I promise. Took several hours, but and it's not something I want to re-record, simply because I think this episode works best when we don't have a script. So hope you enjoy. It's now time for a very get to know you edition bonus episode of Game Pass or Pass, the podcast where we play games on Microsoft's Game Pass service, tell you which games to pass into your friends and which games to simply pass on by. But this episode, it was a request. You're not going to learn about Game Pass. You're going to learn about us. And by us, I am Corey. I am joined by the man, the myth, the great Bambino, Basher.
The great Bambino, isn't that a white man?
Yes. I don't.
Can I get a like a big time Negro League player?
Sure. Who do you want to be? You can be whoever you want to be, bro.
You know what? I want to be Jackie Robinson. Did he have a nickname?
I don't know.
Too tall, Jackie. That's what they called him.
There you go. You heard it here first. You are now that person. All right. This episode was actually requested last year, and this is actually our first episode of the new year, so this is now the only time we've really had time to get to it. So, and it's a good idea. We now got some more listeners, and so if this is your first time joining us, or you joined us recently, you might not know a lot about Basher and myself. That's not even his real name. His mother did not name him Basher.
That's untrue. Don't believe the hype.
So this isn't going to be a crazy long episode, but we're just going to kind of go over who we are, as this is a different kind of podcast where you're not listening about our daily lives and, you know, our banter about the newest games and why we think these newest games are for us, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to talk about us, and let's start with Basher. Basher. Okay. I also want to preface this. I had like a questionnaire that I was going to send and fill out myself, but I was like, you know what? I feel like that's a little bit too formal. We're going to freeball it. We're going to freeball this.
We're going off the cuff here.
We're going off the cuff of what do you think the listeners of Game Pass or Pass should know about you?
I mean, personally, I think it's your mind of business. Personally, that's how I feel. I mean, why not give the very basic gamer podcast? Start there with that bio. Been gaming for 30 years. Started on my cousin's Atari, probably 2600. My game back then was probably Spider-Man and whatever else looked somewhat playable on that system way, way back then. Got my first Nintendo at Christmas. And even then, I wasn't in love with gaming, I would say. I would say top five things to do as a child. It wasn't until I got my Sega Genesis.
You are a Genesis kid.
I was a Genesis kid. Genesis do what Nintendo don't. But yeah, so I didn't fall in love with gaming until probably Sega Genesis. And I got my Sonic the Hedgehog, and it changed my entire world. Since then, some of my favorite games has been the Metal Gear Solid series, the Final Fantasy series, and some eclectic stuff here and there, but also some big blockbuster stuff here and there too. Like I'm kind of a, I would describe myself as sort of an all around gamer that kind of goes in and out of the fads or my own personal fads, if you will. Sometimes I will love a 2D scroll and beat 'em up, and some days I'm just like anything but that. My favorite console, I would have to say PS2.
Scrub.
Probably. I mean, it's too many games in that system you can play. It's way too many. That was Super Nintendo. What about yourself, Corey Schultz?
Yeah, so I got into gaming I was just a small chap. I was a young lad. As far as I can remember, gaming, I was always interested in it. My dad was into computers a lot, so even from when I was before I can remember, we had a computer in the house, kind of thing. And
nerd.
Yeah, basically. So the stuff that I remember messing around with Windows 3.1 and Ski, you know, trying to play solitaire at the age of like 3 and having no idea what was happening. We also had an NES in the household, but I wasn't allowed to touch it, actually. I remember that. I wasn't allowed to play it till I was like 5 or 6, for whatever reason. I don't remember why exactly that was. But I could touch the computer because whatever, parenting. So kind of like the games that stick out in my head is kind of the first games were like the original Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario 3, The Legend of Zelda. Kirby's Adventure was actually the first video game that I ever was given to me. We had other games, but Kirby's Adventure was the first game that was to me from Santa, you know, because Santa's real. So that's kind of a game I remember. But Doom, you know, Doom, I should probably not have been playing Doom, but that was, my dad was into that stuff. So that was part of the hype. You know, Doom Shareware was a frequently played game here. And so that's also my favorite series. And maybe that's why, but it's just a game that's always been, I've identified with. And it grasped me at a young age of just how difficult and scary and just kind of crazy it was. But I was hooked ever since then. Super Nintendo was the next system I had. I did get a Genesis way after even the 64 came out. So I've played stuff like Streets of Rage, Sonic the Hedgehog, Sonic and Knuckles, etc. Super Nintendo was kind of a big one for me. I still have mine and actually have a lot of the games for it. But Mega Man X was a game on that console that really spoke out to me. Super Metroid was one. Killer Instinct. Let me think here. Star Fox was another one. The Mighty Morphin Power Rangers game. I played the crap out of that. And then I eventually did get a 64. I was not a PlayStation kid. I got a PS2 way later. That's because everyone else had one. But I was always a Nintendo guy. So I went from Super Nintendo to 64. Pokemon Stadium was I played way too many games. That's another one. Game Boy. Game Boy was actually Game Boy Color in general. I have put so many hours on my Game Boy Color. It's kind of gross. I've played so many games on that. And then when I was old enough to kind of get my own job, I became kind of more of an Xbox person. I think a lot of people did during the 360 generation. I eventually have everything, though. I usually didn't get things until I found a reason to. But nowadays, I play everything. So I've got gaming PC, got Xbox Series X, PS5, a Series S, and I got the Switch and all that stuff. So kind of like Basher in terms of I am eclectic in that I play a little bit of everything. And throughout the years, I've gone through different phases. Like there was a phase where I was super into JRPGs and I just wanted to play everything. I played the Japanese fan translated Dragon Ball Z games on the Super Nintendo. Like I was seeking out stuff so hard that I found stuff like that on it. Bait and Kados is probably one of my favorite RPGs ever. I absolutely love that game.
Highly underrated.
Highly underrated. And I'm playing that now. It's actually kind of weird that they're talking about it. But yeah. So stuff like that. That's one of my all-time favorite games. Trying to think what else I would put up there. Mega Man X 1-4. Those are games that I revisit quite often, at least once a year. But with X4 probably being my favorite. I go between X1 and X4 quite a bit. I think X1's actually the better game, but X4 is more. There's just more in there. You got Mega Man and you've got Zero. So you can get, so that's, I got that going.
I will say that's one thing I kind of wish I had in common with most gamers. Most gamers can really go back and play. I mean, I got a friend who loves Metal Gear Solid as much as I do, if not more, and he'll go back and play MGS1 right now. And just all the way through. And I got friends who will play through Mega Man and Mario, like OG, like Super Mario Bros. 3 is probably one of the best games of all time. And I got friends of him who will go through and play those games all over again. But I just don't get, I don't like playing the games again for some reason. Like it's not that I don't get enjoyment out of them. It's just that my gut feeling through the whole thing is I want more of this just new. And I think we got to a point where in industry remakes have gotten really popular. Not even remakes, but remasters. And on top of that, the sort of soft reboots, like the initial game that comes to mind is like that Mortal Kombat 10, I think it was.
That was 9.
It was the 9? 9, yeah. And it was just a back to basics that it was good, but at the same time, it's like, I played this game already. Like, why couldn't we get this done newer? Like, that is one thing as a gamer I just don't have that a lot of people do have. I don't get the let's go back and play through Chrono Trigger again. Like I played through that game once, one of the best games of all time. I'm good. I don't need to get the secret ending. I can YouTube it at this point.
The Mega Man X games are really the only ones that I can go back and play through and actually finish. And part of that is because I've now gotten so good at them. Like they only take about an hour. Like I can load up Super Mario World and get through it in like, you know, 20 minutes with all the warps and stuff. But for some odd reason, the Mega Man games are specifically those X games are it's everything for me. It's probably nostalgia along with like the soundtracks of those games are absolutely phenomenal. Those are soundtracks that I listen to outside of playing the game. So it's like it's really just like me hopping in for an hour and just kind of relaxing, turning off my brain, going to something comfortable. But I'm sort of with you. Like there's some old game like Doom's kind of the same way, but I've got Doom mastered down to where like I can beat, you know, Doom 1 and Doom 2 in a couple hours kind of thing. But no, yeah, I'm kind of with you. Like long RPGs, Bait and Kados, I have probably played 3 or 4 times over, you know, the entirety of it. But I have also started that game probably 50 times and, you know, get a couple hours in. I'm like, I'm good. Like, you know, I just kind of want to check in on it, see how it is and go from there.
Let me ask you, Mr. Schultz, what games don't you like? Can't stand.
Games don't I like? So that's a big question. 4X games, I have tried to get into many times. I am bad at them. Is Civ technically a 4X game?
I guess
that's the only one I can get into. I've tried 4X games, just can't get into them. That and I cannot. I just for the life of me, I have tried. I cannot get into Yakuza games. Don't know why. That's not exactly a genre.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it is. It is now. I think Yakuza is a genre
right.
Itself.
Fair enough. Yeah, I've tried Yakuza Zero. I've tried Yakuza Kiwami. I've tried that. I just can't do it. But other than those, like those are the only genres that I just cannot get into. But I am very much. This is not probably a conversation for this time, but like. I am very much turning into that person to where I've always been gameplay over everything, but the modern era of games of gameplay has been sort of recycled so often that I am finding myself playing smaller, quicker. I guess for the, you know, indie games for the most part of just like if a game does not grab me within the first 5 to 10 minutes, I am very unlikely to keep going.
Oh, you're absolutely right. This is why I still think Uncharted 2 is one of the best games ever, because it just does take, and it does not start with 45 minutes of cutscenes. And again, this comes from a guy who loves Metal Gear Solid. If they make another one, well, everything's messed up over there, Konami and Kojima, but hypothetically, if they were to make another one, it would start off with an hour worth of cutscenes, and I'll be there day one and love it.
But that's almost a genre in itself, a Kojima
right.
game, you know.
But like, well, I'm with you. Like at this point, I think the older I get as well, it's like with so much real world things to do, you have to grab me with some gameplay immediately. I don't quite remember how the first Last of Us started. but that's probably one of the last
the flashback scene.
Was that it? Was
you're in the town and you're kind of watching the town.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of the last games to really grab me early on without too much gameplay. It takes a lot at this point for me to really just love a game and not be gameplay over.
I really don't know if it's an age thing or if it's, you know, I've just played so many games. And so I do want to transition a little bit into sort of our professional background in gaming. You know, we're not like hardcore gamers or not professional gamers, but what I mean is we both have dabbled in the writing, and that's actually kind of how we met. But I say that, and like I just don't know, like modern games are, they're different. I mean, it's we're chasing trends, we're chasing whatever, you know. Ubisoft games, they get the pedigree of them all being sort of the same gameplay loop, kind of, you know, recycled and put with a different coat of paint on it. And I think that's very true. I think there's an argument to be made that modern games are better than ever, but they're also kind of the same more than ever. So there's that. And it's, I still play a lot of modern games, obviously. You know, I'm going to play Horizon Forbidden West. I'll probably dabble in Elden Ring. I'm going to play Gran Turismo, stuff like that. But I guess the one thing I did, and I'm put you on the spot here, but what is the one game that you have played that you never thought you would like and you ended up loving it? And I'm going to go first just because I was thinking about it. Of that game for me was Forza Motorsport 2 on Xbox 360, which everyone ended up having got a copy somehow. But like, that's a game that sticks out to me of just like, I liked cars, but I never understood racing games. And then for whatever reason, I picked up that game, and it took a while for me. You know, that was during the era to where like I would play games that I wasn't exactly into, but I was like, I got this game, I'm going to play it. I don't have anything else to do. And I played that game, and now every Forza game I've dumped hundreds of hours into, and go, and that's just a genre. I never thought I would be a simulation person. And now I play PC Building Simulator and listen to podcasts. So the simulation genre is definitely one that sticks out for me. So what's a genre or a game that pulled you into a genre that you just weren't expecting?
To be honest with you, there's a lot of them. And I think for me, it works in a way where I can remember a good amount of games that did that for me, that brought me to the genre. I like one of the games earlier games I remember was Final Fantasy VII. I saw it in the Blockbuster. It had a guy with spiky hair and a big sword, and me and my cousin thought, oh, we're going to start hacking and slashing our way through, because that was our genre at the time. We didn't do a lot of RPGs at that second, but even then we got to like the flower scene, the church scene rather, where we fall into the flowers and we're like, all right, we're turning this off because this is clearly not the game for us. I come back to it like a couple of weeks later. I'm like, wait a minute, and all of a sudden it clicks, and like this is like amazing. But so that was amazing. And then you have games like Katamari Damacy, I think it's called. That came out of nowhere for me. Just the idea of rolling things up like in a ball made no sense. There was a whole, and it's sort of the reason I fell in love with PlayStation brand so much, is because they kept putting out games I did not know I would like. So like games like Katamari Damacy, the first Demon's Souls is still one of my favorite games of all time. And I didn't think I would like that genre, that type of action adventure. There's really a handful of games that do it for me. And I mean, honestly, WoW. Like, I didn't think I would like WoW the first time I played it. Like, that's another game I probably put in like an hour or three before I was like, oh, I get it now. And I kind of fell in love with it. Like, there's, again, I kind of go in and out of the genres here. And all it takes is one good game from that genre for me to realize that kind of what the genre is about and how good it can be. But then that leads to a champion of, if you will, that genre, and then everything chasing that specific genre trend. And then kind of leads to over saturation, and all of a sudden I'm not in love with that genre anymore. Like I used to, there was a time I would buy every open world game because it was new, it was fresh, it was a thing to do. And now we just finished playing Halo Infinite, and I'm like, I'm been over this for a while now. So there, to answer your question, there's quite a few games that got me into that kind of genre breaking for me.
Yeah, I was lucky enough that since my dad was into PCs, that like a lot of those genres, kind of niche genres that were not on consoles and stuff, like the dungeon crawlers and the loot based games. Like I played the original Diablo and Diablo 2 for far, far, far too long. I was a child that had nothing to do and play those and stuff like Max Payne, the original Max Payne and Max Payne 2. Like I played those a lot too. And so I was lucky in that. But so I know you said your favorite console was the PS2. So what's your favorite game on the PS2? If you had to pick one right now, what would it be?
That's not possible. This is not even a possible thing.
First one that comes to mind, go.
Again, probably Metal Gear. Yeah, I mean.
Second one?
Or the third one.
The third one? Never played a Metal Gear game.
I would probably go the third one. Although MGS2 had the best bait and switch ever, that actually worked. Take notes, other game companies and developers.
Yeah, I think mine would probably be Super Nintendo. I think it has to be, because I just spent so much time with it. And the best game for there has got to be Mega Man X for me.
I think people our age is going to be a PlayStation or Super Nintendo.
Right. Those are the two. Yeah, and I really did not get into the PlayStation. I had a PS. I actually had what they called the PS1. Some people might remember, but it was like the rebranded model. And the whole thing about that was that you could get the little screen for it. I never got the screen. But at one point, PS1s were $50. And I remember buying one because I wanted to play, I think it was Spyro, actually. Like the OG Spyro, because everyone liked those games. And so like I got a PlayStation, but it came late. And I had a PS3, but I did not love my PS3. I had a PS2, and I played the crap out of it like everyone else did. But I never really identified with that brand the way other people did. Like I will never deny it its glory. Like I fully understand why they're the market leader and stuff, but I didn't, their dominance to me didn't make sense until the PS4, if that makes sense.
I think that's fair. I think PS3 spent too much time, and this is this is coming right off the heels of when the PS3 was released, I was knee deep PlayStation fanboy. But even then, that's when it started to go back to what you said earlier. That's when it started to creep in to the back of my head that these systems don't necessarily have anything on them all the time.
Right.
And PS3 was the system that really kicked that idea off of me. And I'm realizing, you know what? I don't have to buy that game, this system right now. I could wait because you've already told me Metal Gear is not coming out till this time anyway. So, or Gran Turismo is not coming out till this time anyway. So, I'll just wait it out.
Before we get to the more industry, have you ever gotten a console day one? Do you ever do any camping out, anything like that?
I've never gotten a day one console. I don't. It never. I mean, for a number of reasons, probably the primary reason probably I had decent parents who would not do such things. And then when I got older and I was able to do it, that's when, I guess in a much larger topic, that we grew up in an era when it wasn't cool to be a nerd. It wasn't okay to be
that's
a
fair.
Geek. So, I mean, being
like, and you're a little bit older than me. I'm in my early 30s. You're 36. You're a couple years older than me. Oh wow, I didn't realize you're that much older than me. 5 years older than me. And yeah, like when I was in high school is when the 360 came out. I was a freshman in high school, and that's really when gaming sort of transformed into being cool. I guess you would have missed that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like you were not only did you not get girlfriends, you weren't invited to things, you were made fun of. Like, it, like, so like the idea of me camping out for an Xbox or something, or a PlayStation would have been like, it's like social suicide in a way. Like, for like, unless you're that diehard of a nerd or a geek, I guess, or a gamer rather. So there are a number of factors of why I never did it, but ultimately the major factor, the biggest factor, was I just didn't have, I never felt like, as much as I love gaming, it just never quite took over my life to a point where I needed to put the brakes on for everything else.
I fell victim to the Wii hype. But really what it was is I wanted Twilight Princess, and they had delayed the GameCube version of Twilight Princess. And I was like, I guess I'm getting a Wii. Like, I was going to get a Wii no matter what, but I actually did the whole camp out thing for it. You know, 12 hours, freezing cold. Guy brought us McDonald's because he wanted to camp out, but he couldn't, and he worked there. So he got off at like 4 a.m. He brought us all cheeseburgers and fries. One of the coolest things that ever happened. I was like, this is life. Life is never going to get better than this. I bought two boxes of bottle caps. I ate both of them the whole night, and then I had a sugar crash and fell asleep for like 2 hours. And then I got an Xbox One for, and I don't, nobody laugh at me about this. I got an Xbox One for Killer Instinct. I had to play Killer Instinct on Xbox One day one. That is what I did. And I was heartbroken because my D-pad on my day one controller did not work. And then I had to go and buy another controller and try to explain to the manager, like, I'm going to return this. Is that okay? And he was just like, I guess. Like, that was a very awkward conversation. Also, the same man sold me my Switch, and was a complete jerk about it because I told him I was buying my games digitally, and he was like, why would you want to do that? You're just going to clog up the memory. And I was just like, first off, sir, I am a consumer. I will buy whatever I want. Second off, back off. I will do whatever I want. It's none of your business. I liked him during the Xbox One, but during the Switch launch, he was a jerk. So there's a powered up tip for you, GameStop. How you guys doing? How's your stock price? And so, yeah, so those are the two that I had. These are just some random questions I had written down here. So the Wii, that was cool to be a part of that movement. We were just kind of a little bit, couple years apart. Like, when the Wii hit, it was a phenomenon. Like, I was the cool kid because I skipped school to play the Wii the day it came out. I played Wii Tennis after camping out for like 13 hours. So I was dead tired, and then immediately fell asleep and didn't play anything for like 2 days. But yeah, so just curious on that. So we have favorite console.
Well, actually, go ahead. Before we move on, I may have, if not day one, it was day two or three. It was not a full week for sure of the Dreamcast release, where I got the Sonic Adventure.
Yeah, see, I played a Dreamcast, but I didn't really start like paying attention, like before the internet. Paying attention to gaming was gaming magazines. And so me not being a Sega person, like, I had heard about this Dreamcast. And then I remember going to a electronics boutique.
EB World. I remember those.
Yeah. You named out Blockbuster earlier. Blockbuster also had the original Game Pass, I might add. The I think it was actually called Game Pass, too. It was $19.99 a month, and you could just go in
and
get whatever game you wanted.
Sure did.
Yeah, and then you just brought it back, and as long as you played your monthly subscription or whatever, you could just switch out the game whenever you wanted. My mother worked at a event center that had a bar with a big screen TV, and I was able to play my GameCube on that big screen TV, and it was literally within walking distance from Blockbuster. So I have played literally the entire GameCube library up until this point, for the most part. I'm sure there's a couple obscure games that I'm missing. But because of that, I have played a lot of them. A lot of PS2 games as well that you might not have heard of. But yeah, so you name drop Blockbuster. Dreamcast, EB. I had seen, like everybody, I saw Sonic running away from the whale, and my mind was blown.
Sold. One of the biggest gaming moments in my entire life, and it's hilarious looking back at it now, how just stupid it looks, but it was at the time marvelous. And I'm just like, yep, we're getting that.
You didn't even control it.
No,
he just ran away from the screen. You're just like, this is it, we're done, gaming is over.
another just going down memory lane real quick. Another going back to another question of a game I played that I didn't know I would love fall in love with. Power Stone. That is a game. That's a franchise that needs to come back. Does it predate? It does not.
Does it what?
I thought for a second predated Smash Bros, but it definitely does not.
It doesn't. But in a way, it kind of does. Like, because that original Smash Brothers, not a lot of people remember. It wasn't a super popular game. Melee is really the game that put it on the map. But no, you are correct.
But yeah, like bring back some Power Stone.
And the last one I have here, I accidentally just deleted it. Oh my God, what did it say?
Control
Apparently
Z.
We're not going to talk
That's
about
all
that.
You gotta do.
No, I'm in OneNote and I was doing it on my phone, so I have no Control Z. I'm going to see if the other one has it. I just had surgery, so my brain doesn't work. What did that say? It was a good question too. I just totally lost it, and it is now gone forever. This is fabulous. Fabulous radio. There you go. That's us. So the way that Bash and I met, so I actually, how much do I want to divulge here? So when I was about 18 or 19, this was kind of when the internet was to make your own website and your own podcast. It was getting a lot easier. And, I had sort of decided that I wanted to do something in either law enforcement or something in writing. And I actually was going to college for writing, one whole semester. I know to hold your applause. And, I had decided that I wanted to do something in writing simply because you had to be 21 to join the police force. And so I decided to make my own website. And so that's what I did. I made For the Love of Gaming. I got some friends together. And I was like, hey, we're going to talk about video games. And I set up two Rock Band microphones in my kitchen. And I had my own little headset. And that was the first ever foray into the gaming media world. It's For the Love of Gaming podcast, and we did that for many years, and I actually eventually sort of turned that into, once I taught myself how to do some basic web design, turned that into sort of like a blog, I guess you could call it. And I know like we like to call them like, oh, I ran a website. We had blogs, let's be honest. They were glorified blogs, and started reviewing games, and then got into, what's the word I want to say? What was the name of that website?
WordPress, Blogger.
The one where we met on the forums. What was the name of that site?
Oh, that was in the OGAF. What was that?
No, it was like a gaming media site. And you had to apply. GamePress. There you go. So GamePress was the site that, you know, the idea of talking to media and stuff, I didn't really understand. I didn't understand how people got to play games early and learn about games early and stuff. And eventually I landed on GamePress, and that's where I got sort of my first in. And the first media company I ever talked to was actually Bethesda. They were super excited about me too. I thought they loved me. They have no idea who I am now. Or probably ever did. They're very good at PR apparently. And so I just started emailing around, and before I knew it, I was on press lists for Square Enix, Ubisoft, Bethesda, Xbox. The one company that never would talk to me actually was Nintendo. Don't know why. Nintendo didn't like me. PlayStation, all that. And that's just kind of what I did. I started writing reviews and did that for about 3 or 4 years. And then by that time I had really, I won't say proven myself, but I had proven to a lot of these media companies that, yeah, like I don't have the readership of IGN, but I am very dedicated. And we almost never miss an episode of the podcast, stuff like that. So I really started getting review copies then. And then at that time, when you got review copies, you were in because you got the day one coverage. So that started happening. And that's when I got, we decided to go to our first media event, which was PAX. And, that's around that time is when the wheels started to come off of For the Love of Gaming. People just didn't want to do it anymore. I was kind of doing it by myself. Not to go too deep into the weeds, had sort of some life-changing moments. I suffered from a break-in and a robbery that kind of just destroyed me mentally. And as all my friends were kind of, I shouldn't say friends, my colleagues and stuff like that were leaving For the Love of Gaming. And then that happened. I sort of lost my way, and I just didn't want to do it anymore. But then after some time, I really wanted to get back out there, but it was kind of too late. At that point, it's kind of like YouTube now. Like if you stop writing or you stop doing things, your, you know, Google does not like that. So showing up in search engines and stuff like that, our traffic just died. And that's when I started looking for somebody to help me with a podcast. And that's when I met Basher on the Games Press forums. And nice little forum. They're actually really helpful people.
No, but like Game Press was legit in terms of the people you met there. The people you conversated with. It was not your regular NeoGAF, Game Facts, if you're as old as I am, forums. Like these people, like we're all like, it was like a bunch of people in the same boat trying to do the same thing, and they weren't. I never got the feeling that we were out to like push each other over. Like we're all just like, who did you get this week? All right, can you hook up that interview? Can you help me out with this? I help you out with that. It was always kind of like hands out type of vibe there. But to go back in time, how I got started in this living room biz. So I was listening to I was big into podcasts in general ever since it was a thing. Certain comedians I know were doing it, so I was heavily into comedic podcasts. And then my friend Snap says, who was big into one of the gaming podcasts, he said, we should do one ourselves. I'm like, yeah, that seems like work. I'm not going to do that. He's like, no, it's not work at all. It was like, I'll do the whole thing. I know how to, like we'll do it over. Because he lives in Minnesota. I live in Boston. He's like, listen, we just get on Skype. We realize that's a bad idea, like 30 years later. And then you use Skype, you get Audacity, get some microphones, you're good to go. Snaps isn't the most dedicated worker.
It always seems to be there's always one person who's overly dedicated. You got the person who shows up every time, you know, from time to time. And then you got the guy who's like, he's really into it, but he just can't ever seem to show up.
Right. And it's like, and me being me, not to say I'm the most dedicated person in the room, but me being me also on top of that, I figure I could do something, especially if it's on the computer, I figure I can do it well. So like, at one point, I'm like, I can do this better than Snaps and probably faster and more consistent. So I took over the whole recording, engineering, uploading duties. That kind of transferred to, and good for you for having, for the love of gaming for so long, because I went through probably three or four different rebrandings. And I thought they were all kind of necessary because, like you said, like people kind of burn out. You get new crew, you get new people, new friends, and new hosts and whatnot. And it kind of ended up with me doing these interviews. And that's where I had probably the most fun doing this, was using Game Press and my quote-unquote clout there at the time, and getting people in the industry to come on the show and talk with. I believe you were in on a few of those as well for the early ones, where we got some people from the industry, just like no one huge. I mean, depending who you are, because we got Mark Spector, who I think is kind of big in this industry. And we got people to sit down and talk to us, and it was just a cool moment to shoot the crap with these people and just kind of like, pick their brain and figure out how they do stuff and whatnot. But again, like all good things that have to come to an end. And I was never a fan of kind of forcing people to do stuff or forcing myself to do things. It's like you said, life gets in the way. You don't have a whole lot of time to do it. At that point, I was running a website, AKA blog, the podcast, doing the promotion, the marketing, investing in it monetarily and time-wise. It was truly not even a part-time job. It was a half-time job. It was, when I got off work, it was podcasting time, even though it wasn't podcasting. And even though we got, like, through promotions and giveaways and such. We would get as high as 5,000-10,000 listeners in a week. It was like, I just got burnt out. And this was, again, this was before podcasting was getting 30,000 advertisers every 10 minutes. This is before podcasting was the Joe Rogan Experience. So, like, I'm just like, this before Patreon and all that stuff. So I'm just like, listen, like this, like I'll come back to it when I feel like it, I guess. So I kind of fell out of it there. And then kind of sometime later, that's when I got, I think you contacted me about For the Love of Gaming. And then I was like, this is the perfect opportunity because I don't have to do the halftime job thing again. I don't want to speak for you, but I feel like we're in the same kind of headspace where we both aren't trying to make this the full-time gig. We're not trying to quit our jobs over this. We're not trying to change our lives over this. But at the same time, like, whatever happens, happens. But we're not trying to, we're not 19 years old again thinking this is the dream. This is like where we're kind of having fun and doing and getting our creative buzz out of there.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to describe it. You know, when I was 19, you know, the dream was like, I want to write and talk about video games. And I'm very proud of the fact that I was able to do that. And I took something from nothing. And I did it. You know, like I attended PAX Prime and PAX East as, you know, I had a media badge. And I did that on my own. You know, I was talking to developers. I was seeing stuff that was years out from, you know, some stuff wasn't even announced yet. And it was an experience that, like, you know, the idea of doing that when I was 19, it's just like it was the holy grail of just like, I want to know about stuff before people know about stuff. And that still happens these days. But after you're doing it for so long, it's, the thing that there was very sobering moments of attending those events and just like, and meeting these developers. And I don't know why, you know, I put them on a pedestal, but it's just, they're just people, you know, like I met these people and they're super excited about their game, but like, they're still just people at the end of the day. And it didn't remove the luster for me, but like, I became like you said, like, I wasn't really into the games as much as I was just like, I want to know about you. Like, tell me what it's like to make this game. I am not a creative person in the slightest. Like, I cannot create anything in terms of like art, in terms of programming. Like, that's just not me. I'm just not good at those things. But what I am good at is picking people's brains and trying to get information out of them in a way that is compelling in terms of making it interesting. And that's the part that I really fell in love with. But unfortunately, most people don't care about that. And that's the sad truth, is that I would try to focus on stuff. Like, I remember doing like a deep dive at a PAX one time on Unreal Engine with a developer. And there was actually a new engine at the time called Trinity from, was it NVIDIA? I don't remember who made Trinity. But so it was an engine that never really took off. Raven's Cry was actually the game. If you've ever played Raven's Cry, I'm sorry. But it was one of the first games to use it. And I remember doing like a deep dive with this developer, and like, I worked super hard on it and just nothing. Nobody cared about this. It was one of the worst performing things on the site at the time. And I was just like, it was just very defeating and just like, this is the stuff that I really care about. And I don't get to, no one else seems to care. And I could keep doing it. But like you said, at that time, like, it was literally my full-time job. And I was making, if I was lucky, like $15,000 for the year. And that was on top of putting everything else into it. You know, like, so I was, you know, health-wise, I was not great. Monetarily-wise, I wasn't saving a dime. I wasn't going into debt, but I was pretty close to going into debt. And yeah, so why am I rambling on? That was just for me to say, like, yeah, like, it's, If I could podcast and still talk to developers and make a real wage and be happy with where I'll be at the end of my life, I would do it. But unfortunately, reality has set in. And unless you're a YouTuber and doing the thumbnails with the catchy title and all that, like, you're realistically not going to make a ton of money, and that's fine. And I there's nothing against those people that do that, but that's not how I want to consume gaming content. And that's not how I want to experience it. So the content that I would make would be more akin to talking about developers and doing deep dives. And I just don't think there's an audience out there that cares enough. So I unfortunately just don't do it. So that's how I landed on this. And I think you and I, we both have a passion for the industry in a way that is hard to communicate. And so just an average gaming, like everyone's got their own gaming podcast. And I think that, you know, when we would talk, we would go into it and we would go into it with a good spirit and try to stand above the rest. But unless you've got, you know, a major publisher or something behind you to really help push your podcast, you're not really going to do anything. You're not going to get your thousands of views, and that's just what it is. And so I think we landed on this show specifically just because it's different, and it's also challenging us in many ways of looking for games and trying to find the good, trying to find the bad, but it's also fun. Game Pass is something that when it first came out, I said, this is going to change the industry. People thought I was crazy, but joke's on them. So I think that's kind of how we landed here, but
yeah, absolutely. And I just want to build off of that last point. The most fun I had again was just talking to like you said, talking to these developers and these game makers and who are on a indie level, a smaller level, or even a larger level, like Matt Schaefer. But the issue is like, if you're not IGN, it just doesn't pick up the traction, because to your point, I remember getting, I'm going to butcher his last name because he's French, but we got a Guillermo Provolo or something, the guy who made We Happy Few. Before that, he made another game, I think it was called Caroline or something, and we got him for that game, and it was a super cute little indie game, and it was right before he turned big, and he got publishing with, like, I believe it was 2K who published that game, and I remember like having just a really good conversation with him. It was him, me, Corey, the other Corey. I'm not sure if you were there, but I just remember it was like, it just wasn't. I thought it was like a really good interview. Like, we always have really good interviews, but it just wasn't picking up the traction, like you said, and it's simply because it's not the dev or the lead dev from Call of Duty. It's just someone completely different and who on a smaller scale, and people just weren't picking it up. But I think if I could say anything to like the gamers out there who play in these games, I would say, don't follow the publisher. Don't follow the company. Don't worry about what Bethesda's doing. Don't worry about who Rare is even at this point. Follow the developers, because those specific people, they're the ones that create those unique experiences that you fall in love with. They up and leave and go at a whim, unfortunately, due to the way this business is made and handled. And the company remains. So that's why you have issues like people playing Back 4 Blood or Evolve and wondering what the heck happened to Turtle Rock, what the heck happened to the Left 4 Dead team. When you look at that team, like, a lot of those people were Valve employees. You know, it's like not a whole lot of them were Turtle Rock employees. So if you follow the right people, which is what you should do, it's like watching a movie. You're not going to watch a movie because Sony Pictures produced it. You're going to watch it because a certain actor signed on to it. You're going to watch it because a certain writer is attached to it. You're going to watch it because a certain director directed it. I would say do that more often as you can, and support the developers on that level. Because that's where to me it truly mattered. Buying a Ubisoft game because it's Ubisoft doesn't mean anything anymore at this point. Unfortunately, we are past the times of the Super Nintendos and the Genesis, where Sega's name is the one that you know is going to be quality. That's not where we're at anymore. You got to definitely follow your favorite creator at this point.
And it's gotten easier to do that, luckily, with the internet, but it's also becoming more difficult because of you've got the mega IPs and you've got the Fortnite and you've got the Halo. Like, it's really hard when the most popular games are made by very large studios that a lot of them are contract workers and stuff. And this isn't like a plea of just like, oh, like the industry is bad. Like, I'm not trying to be Jason Schreier and spin everything to be negative, but like, you know, if you can, you know, reach out to a developer and just say, hey, like, I know you worked on this game. Like, it's really cool. I really enjoyed it. You know, that's really what they do it for. They just want to make some fun games. And sometimes it's really hard to remember that when the news the media cycle is dominated by sales and dominated by announcements and IPs. And it's like, you know, Battlefield 2042 is on fire and a disaster. And I'm guilty of it too. Of like, anytime that pops up, I love reading it because it's hilarious to see what EA has done to this franchise. But at the same time, it's also, I don't want to say I enjoy it because that is not what I want to say, because it makes it sound like I'm like enjoying other people's suffering, but it's the exact lesson that you just talked about. It's like, people think of Battlefield as the game, as if it's the same people making it every time, but that's not true. A majority of DICE left. A lot of people don't know that. Like, when Patrick Sutherland left, he took a lot of people from DICE with him. And they've got a new studio and they're making a lot of tech and stuff like that. They're making that Arc Raiders game that was shown off at the Game Awards. And it's like the Callisto Protocol, which is coming in from the PUBG universe, was made by the original Dead Space guy. You know, like, that's the kind of stuff that I wish more people would kind of pay attention to, because in some ways it's unfair that a lot of people work on these games and a lot of people don't realize, what do I want to say? Like, those people deserve credit, but a lot of times with a lot of creative processes, it's really only a couple people's ideas that are built upon. And those developers help bring those ideas to life, and they should be commended for that. But the leader is really what's important here. You know, those couple people that really have those ideas and can run with them. It's kind of like Bioshock with Ken Levine. Like, if Bioshock would not exist without Ken Levine, and all those people that helped him work on it are extremely important, but you really do have to follow the creators to kind of understand the creative process of gaming. So, but yeah, there you go. There you go. That's a little bit more insight into us and why we sort of do this, where we come from, how long we've been podcasting. I was just thinking about this. It's like, we've actually been podcasting together for like 5 years, 6 years now. Has it really been that long?
Yes, it's been longer than 5 years for sure. It's like, I mean, the pandemic's been going on for like, what, 2 or 3?
Yeah, about a year and a half. So like, I'm trying to remember like.
Because you were on my podcast first.
Is that true?
I believe. And then I came over for the love of.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember if we started podcasting before or after the PS4 and the 360 generation, or the PS4 Xbox One. That's another thing. Like, I guess I have met a lot of people that I still talk to from podcasting. Like, I was talked to the No Quarters Crew Paranerds back in the day. Those are some people that I still talk to. There was the TVGP. Like, so that's another thing that's led to some good friendships. But I'm just trying to, like, that's, it's been at least, I mean, it's been a minimum of over 5 years, but it might be close to like eight or nine years. No, and that's nuts.
No, that makes more sense to me, because again, you were on my podcast and that was well over 5-6 years ago. So
yeah. So it's probably like 7 or 8 years. That's nuts. That is nuts. I have no words for that. That's crazy. Absolutely nuts.
And if I could say one last thing, I guess is going to be, if people listening, if you have, this is the time and the to do things, like anything you want to do on the side, anything you want to do to get that creative juice out there, like, do it, because it's never been easier. Like you said earlier in the podcast, We started when it was easier to do a podcast and put it out there, but it was still work.
It took work. Actually getting it off the ground and like stuff like updating episodes and making sure that it was seen in the right places.
RSS feeds and stuff like
feed burner and you know like SEO optimization
and iTunes and, like, and emailing people to do it. Like that was like right. Absolutely out of control. Now one button, 3 minutes, you guys have your episodes up. Like whatever you guys want to do, do it. Like I highly suggest sitting down with some people or reaching out to people online, like the people you game with every night, like sit down with them and be like, what do you want to do? And try to figure out a cool little lane or twist on the medium that you want to do something in. Like for a long time, friends were asking me to do another gaming podcast. And I'm just like, I don't want to do something where I can sit down and do the news and then talk about what we played all day. Whereas like, when you came to me, it's like, let's do a podcast, but we only play Game Pass games. I'm like, that is a cool enough turn that I want to jump in on. Like, it's relevant and it's going to be relevant from the looks of it. And it's a nice little way to look at the industry, where it's like, I feel like everyone listening and everyone not listening has a unique perspective that they can get out there. So I highly suggest you guys do it at this point in time, especially.
Yeah, and one thing I will say on that is, I agree entirely, but also it's very easy to get discouraged. The audience for this show, like the consistent audience, is like 300-400 people, and not all those people listen to every episode. So like we really only have about 100 to 200 people that listen to every episode. It's very easy to look at that and just get discouraged and just be like, no one cares. But like someone put it into perspective to me for a long time ago. It's like, if you were in a room talking to two or three people, you wouldn't feel like you're really making a difference, right? Like you're not really talking to anybody. But if you were talking to 200 people standing in front of you, like that's 200 people that are listening to you and they want to hear what you have to say. Like, that's crazy. Like that is
absolutely nuts when you think about it.
Yeah. Like, and again, it's very easy to get discouraged. And you know, you see podcasts. It's like, oh, 1 million downloads an episode, and you go on YouTube, and this person's got 100 million subscribers, and you know, or 100,000 subscribers, and it's like, what? Like, I'm getting 10 people look at my videos. Again, you have to do it, and you have to do it because you love it. If we could do more, we could totally do more and get more people listening to this. 100% we could. We could be selling it. We could be marketing it. I've done all that. Like, I had to sell a podcast and to get to having 10,000 people a week listening was not easy. It took years and years and years. And at the end of the day, the people that really cared, that listened to every episode, are the people that those were the people that were writing in. The people that you go to the trade shows and you sell your butt off and you hand out all these flyers, the people that listened that way, 1 out of 100 of those people really cared. A lot of people, they just add it to their feed and they move on with their life. You know, like those people are important, but at the same, but the people that really care are the ones that are seeking it out. They're going to find it and they're going to listen to it. And those are the people that you want to listen to. So, or those are the people that you want listening. So like I said, I just want to say, you know, don't get discouraged just because you don't get anyone listening for a couple months, or you only get 10 people listening. Like, who knows what's going to happen?
Absolutely. One
episode might blow up.
100%.
Like, you just don't know. You got to do it because you enjoy it. So there you go.
And if you can give the gamers, the listeners, lastly, one recommendation for a game you think they must play that they never played before, the majority speaking, what would it be?
One game. Man, that is tough. I'm gonna go to the well, and I'm gonna say Bait and Kados. I am someone who I have always been fascinated by card games like Yu-Gi-Oh, Pokemon, Magic, stuff like that. That those games to me were always just very cool and intriguing, but all, part of it was probably the collecting aspect, and I loved the different artwork and all that stuff and spellcasters, et cetera, et cetera. And so when I saw this game, it was very similar to Lost Kingdoms. Like Lost Kingdom was a game that I really liked too. It's where you took these cards and you used them in battle. They both did their own thing, but Bait and Kados took it to the next level. Like that's a full on JRPG with this card system that is, it's unique and it's very cool, but not only that, like it's truly a very compelling story with a very in-depth card game that even to this day, I'm still learning new things about. And it got a sequel, or technically a prequel, with Bait and Kados Origins that I don't think is quite as good as the original, but it's still worth playing. And it's, to me, it's just like, if they were to do that nowadays with more people playing JRPGs, I genuinely think it would explode. And it's super upsetting to me that it didn't. Also, why was it only on the GameCube? How did that happen?
That has to be like, some kind of exclusive thing going on back there, because that was when PlayStation would print anything, like literally anything. So like, I'm surprised it wasn't on that system eventually at the very least.
It was both of them GameCube exclusives. So what I'll say is that playing that game on native hardware, extremely expensive. Game is out of print, especially the Origins / sequel / prequel. I would there are ways to play that game. I will just say seek them out. But that is what I would pick. What would you pick? Also, that game looks phenomenal still, Bait and Kados, just so you know.
I will go with a game in a long franchise called Tales of Phantasia. Came out on a Super Nintendo, has some PlayStation releases, has some remasters, re-releases.
Did they also have, did they have a random GameCube exclusive one too?
I think they did. Like they tried to, like, and that's why I kind of want to, that's kind of why it came to mind too, because it's like they really did try to put that game back out for people to play, and it is probably for RPG fans, it's a Tales of series, and it's probably, in my opinion, it's better than the, I think fans would say Tales of Destiny is probably the best Tales of game. I would say Phantasia is at least a close second, and if you could find it anywhere, again, there are ways to play it, figure out your best way to play it. But yeah, give that a shot. It's a very fun, very, very good classic JRPG.
I find it weird we both pick JRPGs and we don't really play modern JRPGs.
I mean, because they don't make them like they used to.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, yeah, you did play that most recent one. I'm totally blanking on the name.
I played the newest Tales. Oh, all the way through.
Zisperia?
Yeah.
Start with the Z.
No, it's not. I don't know, but it's not good. Gameplay wise, is great. It's just the story is garbage. It's absolutely garbage.
I think people actually like that game, so it's kind
of
surprising.
Of course they do, because it's the only JRPG that's been made in like the past like 5 years.
You got me there. So, all right, that's gonna do it. If you want to email us about this episode, what's the email address? gpopfans@gmail.com. You can also shoot us a text message or a voicemail, 574-651-9256. To the person that sent us a text message, we'll be talking about that on the next episode. Just this is a bonus episode. But also, if you want us to recognize you, you got to leave us a name. Didn't leave us a name. 65, that's their number, 574-651-9256. So hope you enjoyed this little deep dive into us. Next episode will be a more traditional episode on a game on Game Pass. But that's going to do for this episode. We will see you next time.
Good day, sirs.